Good morning again. Well, it's officially moving into the Christmas season. I know I'm probably a little late. Some of you are like, yeah, welcome to the party. But you can just tell by looking around the songs we're singing. I don't let myself really get into it until after Thanksgiving. It's like a little too much for me until after Thanksgiving. But one of the things about this season is the level of expectations I think that we have as individuals and as a culture for what it will look like. I came across this a number of weeks back, and I think this identifies kind of the, not just the Christmas effect that we had that kind of influences us, but even just a life effect. But this was called the Paris effect, as in the city, Paris, France. And this actually was something defined and noticed and then defined by psychiatrists. And it came from these people that would go to Paris, and they were expecting the romance that they would see in the movies and these images that were portrayed. And they would get there, and then they would see the reality of Paris, which was a normal city. Basically, this article pointed out, it was written in the Wall Street Journal, citing these psychiatrists, that these visitors would come in expecting a place full of romance, beauty, and wealth, but instead they found pavements peppered with cigarette butts, aggravated commuters packed into metro trains. And what they noticed is some would even experience such anxiety and discomfort and even depression that they would have to go and get treated because of the symptoms that were going about to see a doctor. And what it came about to is they came in with these expectations and then they were met with reality. And we had Thanksgiving a week and a half ago maybe? Yeah. I had an experience very similar to the Paris effect at Thanksgiving time. I went into Thanksgiving thinking that it was going to be, we went to be with my family down in Pasadena thinking it was going to be fun, a lot of laughter, a lot of relaxation, that I was going to get some things done, and that I was going to exercise regularly. Because, you know, Thanksgiving you eat, you want to exercise too. Those were the expectations that I lived with going into the weekend, but I was met with a very different reality. I've been sick for like 4 weeks, and it's been nagging and dragging, and for some reason it got worse again as I was going in. I was tired. I did no exercising. I was cranky because of the sickness and the not exercising, and then I didn't get anything done. In addition to that, some of you know my dad has been fighting cancer for a number of years now, and he's doing better, but when he gets sick because his immune system is down. He was in the hospital 2 different times with severe dehydration, and so we had that going. And honestly, our family, like, you know, our family's great, but my family's very verbal, and so when something's not going well, they will express it, and so there was some of that going on. And honestly, I was miserable the entire time. And I came back going, oh my gosh. And when I get in those situations, sometimes I'll act in ways that I don't like. I don't know if you guys can relate to that. But then you get home and you're like, why am I doing this? And so again, it was my expectations versus reality. Life wasn't as it ought to be in my head. This happens to me on a daily basis, not just Thanksgiving. You guys can relate. I mean, the Christmas season especially, try and get anywhere around Visalia in a hurry. And without people honking at you or getting mad at you because you're slowing them down and you're trying to go fast in the same time. It happens to me weekly when I drive up to Santa Cruz. I drive up to Santa Cruz every week, sometimes twice, to see my boys, to either go to their events, spend time with them, whatever it is. But it never takes the allotted time it's supposed to take because there is always traffic. There's always something going on, and it slows me down. My expectations are I'm going to get there in 3 hours. The reality is no, it's not going to take 3 hours. It's going to take 3.5 to 4. It's not just me, though, because I can hear it. You were laughing. It's all of us. We live in this world where we have expectations for ourselves, for our family members, for our spouses, for our marriage, for our kids, for health and wellness, happiness, our money, and our finances. But then reality sets in, and a lot of times it leads to disillusionment, it leads to frustration, and it can even lead to depression. It's not just you. Like, it is all of us as human beings. I came across this week, and I thought it was super funny. This was a list of Albert Einstein's expectations for his wife. This was auctioned off a number of years back in his personal letters. And the list included daily laundry kept in good order, 3 meals regularly in my room, a desk maintained for my use only, and the demand that she quit talking or leave the room if he requested it. Those were just a few of them. Those were his expectations. Now, the reality was very different. Their marriage did not last. It ended in divorce. And that is expectations versus reality. This is the American culture. We have very high expectations. So a historian, his name is Daniel Boorstin, I think, suggests that Americans suffer from all too extravagant expectations. In his book, The Image, he makes this observation. Here's what he says. He says, as Americans, we expect anything and everything. We expect the contradictory and the impossible. We expect compact cars, which are spacious, luxurious cars, which are economical. We expect to be rich and charitable, powerful and merciful, active and reflective, kind and competitive. We expect to eat and stay thin, to be constantly on the move and ever more neighborly, to go to a church of our choice and yet feel its guiding power over us, to revere God and to be God. Never have people been more the masters of their environment, yet never has a people felt more deceived and disappointed, for never has a people expected so much more than the world could offer. And you look at it, I've talked about this, the end result for us as a nation is you end up with angry, disappointed, disillusioned, anxious, unhappy, and depressed people. The New York Times, this was like a year ago, said Americans are among the most anxious people on earth. Time had an article, it was a front page article, saying the kids are not all right, that American teens are anxious, depressed, and overwhelmed. And the detailed study by the Gallup organization found that Americans feel more anxious, depressed, and dissatisfied with their lives. Polarization is at an all-time high, and a feeling of malaise, or worse, grips the nation. And you can tell we're struggling as a people. And it is not immune here in the church where we worship Jesus and love Jesus and want to live for him. We live with expectations. And a lot of those times, those expectations, they're about us. You can relate to it. I want to get there in a certain amount of time. I want the best Thanksgiving possible. I want this. I want that. It really centers on me. And then reality settles in, and it's very, very different. And we're talking about peace this morning. As this week of Advent, it leads to very much a lack of peace. It brings chaos because of these expectations. But I love our passage today. We've got this model that we can live with expectations, but we're going to struggle in light of that with disappointment, disillusionment, anxiety, depression, whatever it may be, because our expectations will never be met. Think about it. They'll never be met in the way that we want them to. We'll always find more we want, and then reality sets in. So we can live with expectations, but Jesus gives us another option here in John 16. And I want to start at the end of the passage because this summarizes everything that we're going to look at. He says this in verse 16:33. I have told you these things, we're going to look at these things in a second, so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart. I have overcome the world. In me, you may have peace. In the world, you'll have happiness. In the world, you'll have fulfillment. In the world, you'll have everything you want. Or is it in the world you will have trouble? We forget that. When we had these expectations, when I had them going into Thanksgiving, I forgot the reality of this world, that we live in a broken, sinful world where expectations are not met, and reality is very different from what we want or the way that we think things ought to be. And Jesus acknowledges this straight up in this world. He's talking to his disciples. You'll have trouble. And for them, he's talking about persecution for what they believe, being killed for their faith, being imprisoned for their faith. He's talking about some nasty stuff. But, he says, in me you'll have peace. Take heart, I've overcome the world. So we can live with expectations and be constantly frustrated, or, and this is the beauty part, and we're going to look at this in detail in a second, we can live with expectancy. Expectations are about us. Expectancy is about Jesus and what God is doing and the promises he's made. And so let's jump into this. Remember the context of John We've been walking through John, but the context of John, the whole purpose that John wrote it was so that people would believe that Jesus was the Son of God, and that by believing in him, they would have life in his name, the life that God wants us to have. Not this anxious, depressed, all this stuff because of our expectations, but a true life in him. That's the reason that John was written. Well, here, what we step into is a time where Jesus is talking to his disciples directly. And remember, they had expectations for who Jesus was and what Jesus was going to do. They thought that he was going to come and he was going to make the Jewish people the center of the world, and it was going to be a political ruler. And he was going to do what they wanted him to do. And as they started noticing, things looked very different. As they started listening to his teaching and watching what he did, and the fact that he did not just focus on the Jewish people, but he was focusing on everybody, their expectations were starting to be crushed one by one by one. But you can see they're still holding on to them. And that's where we get into John 16. We're going to start in 16. He says this, "In a little while, you will see me no more. And then after a little while, you will see me." Now notice these time frames. In a little while. So in a little bit, you're not going to see me anymore. But then after a little while after that, you will see me. But he doesn't explain what he's talking about. And you see in 17 and 18, some of the disciples said to one another, "What does he mean? Saying, in a little while you'll see me no more, and then after a little while you'll see me? And because I'm going to the Father," they kept asking, "What does he mean by a little while? We don't understand what he's saying." And part of that is they came in with their own expectations for Jesus. And now Jesus is saying, "Look, in a little while, I'm going to be gone. You're not going to see me. But then I'm going to come back." They're like, "Wait, no, that's not what we expected. You were supposed to stay here. You're not supposed to leave us ever, and you're supposed to do what we want you to do." You've never been there where you're like, "God, why don't you just do this? I know best. It's what it ought to be." And that's what's going on for them as they wrestle. And in 19, it says, Jesus saw that they wanted to ask him about this, so he said to them, "Are you asking?" And not that he doesn't already know this. I love the way that John does this. He already knows what's going on. But he says to the disciples, "Are you asking one another what I meant when I said, in a little while, you'll see me no more, and then after a little while, you will see me?" And he knows that that's what they're doing. What they didn't realize was that their world was a world of transition. Jesus had come, but they didn't understand or even expect that he had to die first on a cross. And that he was going to then be raised from the dead. And that's what he's talking about. In a little while, you'll see me no more. That's his death. And then a little while after that, you're going to see me. That's his resurrection. Theirs was a world of transition where God was in the process then of putting to death sin. But they didn't expect that he had to die. Like, we don't like this. And so they're wrestling through that. The thing with us, though, is we also live in a world in transition. Jesus has given us the Holy Spirit to live, but his world is not all it ought to be right now. Would you agree with that? We've got a lot of things going on in this world all over, and you just open up the news every morning, you see it over and over. Death, mourning, pain, war, chaos, arguing, bickering, polarization, people fighting. You just see it. It's depressing sometimes to just open. You know, for me, it's on my phone. Some of you watch the nightly news. Wherever it is, your paper in the morning, you just see the chaos. We also live in a world in transition. There's going to come a time where Jesus comes back and makes things as they ought to be, which is his kingdom on this earth. And he's in the process of doing that. But ours is also a world of transition. And we have to check our expectations. And instead of live by them, we've got to live with expectancy. And that's what Jesus goes on to point out here. So let's jump into 20. He says, "I tell you the truth. You will weep and mourn while the world rejoices. You will grieve, but your grief will turn to joy." And then he goes on to give an illustration of this. "A woman giving birth to a child has pain because her time has come. But when her baby is born, she forgets the anguish because of her joy that a child is born into the world. So with you, now is your time of grief." Expect it, he's telling them. Expect to grieve. Why? Because he's going to die. They don't understand the full grasp of this. But he's saying, expect to grieve. "But I will see you again, and you will rejoice. And no one will take away your joy." And that is because it's built on the death and resurrection of Jesus. But he's saying, expect grief. In 33, he tells us, expect trouble. That's where we have to live, not with our expectations for life, which tend to be that happily ever after. Would you agree with? We want to live happily ever after. I do. I want life to be a happily ever after for me. And you know what? If I think about it, I probably want it for you too. But first for me, right? Do you agree? Some of you guys are like, you are selfish. I am. I would want it for all of us, but I want to be first on that list. But that's just not the way it works. And that's what Jesus is saying. Check your expectations and live with expectancy that though you mourn now, though you face this darkness now in life, and the troubles will come. There's good days and bad days in life, but the troubles come. Live with expectancy that there is going to come a day where we will fully rejoice with each other. And we will live happily ever after with him at the center. It's so funny. We want that fairy tale ending of the happily ever after. But we forget the reality of fairy tales. Even the fairy tales, you know, you think about Cinderella. Was her story all happily ever after? No, most of her story was fighting and struggling. Think about the story. Most of it was fighting and struggling. Sleeping Beauty, the same thing. You know, we look at it, the prince comes, kisses her, she awakens, and life is all good. But if you look at the original story, you know, she had a curse put on her. The curse was kind of not fully undone. She slept for 100 years. In that time, her family died. They mourned her. She was gone for 100 years, and then she woke up. There was strife and struggling before the happily ever after. We forget this. In her book, The Scent of Water, Naomi Zacharias writes about this, specifically the fairy tale mentality, the happily ever after that we want. And she says, we want the good part of the fairy tale. We've only preserved the idea of the happily ever after. On the movie screen, in our minds, we've rewritten the stories and forgotten about the battles the heroines choose to fight. The honesty in the original fairy tale reminds us of another important lesson of following Christ. This present world is not the best of all possible worlds. Our imperfect world only leads to the best of all possible worlds. Heaven is the happily ever after. Until then, she writes, we still live with frogs and century-long naps. That's just the reality. In this world, you will have trouble. But take heart, I've overcome the world. I love the disciples. This is, you know, and this is John. They're always working things out in 29. We're going to jump down a few verses. Then Jesus' disciples said, now you're speaking clearly and without figures of speech. Now we can see that you know all things, and you do not even need to have to ask anyone the questions. This makes us believe that you came from God. Remember, John's all writing about belief. Belief that Jesus is the Son of God, and by believing we may have life in his name. But Jesus answers them in 31, because their expectation now is, we believe, we got it. And he goes, you believe at last? There's a little bit of, I don't know if sarcasm is the right word, but it's kind of like, there's some irony here, because he knows what's coming with them. They are, when he is killed, they know they're gone, they're scattering. They're like, uh-oh, this was not what we expected, we're out of here. He says, you believe at last? And then he goes on, but a time is coming, and has come, when you will be scattered, each to his own home. You will leave me all alone, yet I am not alone, for my Father is with me. He's talking about the darkest of dark, where his friends, his followers are going to be gone. Their expectations shattered. And then after that is when he says, I've told you these things. So that even when you scatter and you are at your lowest, your expectations are dashed, and life seems really dark, that in me you may have peace. In this world you'll have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. That's what it looks like to live with expectancy. We take this world for what it is, the good and the bad. There are days where I say, thank you, God, for so much. There are other days when I say, oh, Jesus, please come back because I am tired of this. This hurts. I want things to be right. But what I know is that when I start expecting something and building something up in my head of this is the way it should look, I need to realize at that moment, this is going to be dashed. Because life is never fully as it ought to be. And that's what living with expectancy is. Instead of looking to what I want, it's living and standing on the promises of God that he's given us, that he's coming back and things will be made right. I came across a story this week and I loved it. It was a man named Dr. Gardner Taylor, and he was a pastor and a trainer of preachers in New York City way back when. And he tells a story when he was preaching in Louisiana during the Depression. Electricity was just coming to that part of the country, but he was out in this rural church. He was preaching. There was just one light bulb hanging down from the ceiling to light the entire church. And as he was preaching, in the middle of a sermon, all of a sudden the electricity went out and it was dark in that room. No windows, it's just pitch black at that point in time. And he was a young preacher at this time. He had no idea what to do. And he kind of stumbled and stammered and was trying to figure it out, frantically moving in his head, until one of the elderly deacons sitting in the back of the church cried out, "Preach on, preacher, we can still see Jesus in the dark." And that was all he needed to move him forward. And I love that saying. Because we, no matter how dark life gets, no matter how bad it gets, no matter how much our expectations are shattered, no matter how much tragedy, whatever goes on, minor irritations to tragedy, we still need to see Jesus in the dark. That's what living with expectancy is all about. Where we choose to put him at the center, his plan. I don't know what it is for you. There's a long list. The trials, financial problems, sickness, family problems, friends sick, doubts, the holidays, loneliness is a big part. Sadness, depression, whatever it is. Struggles are struggles. I am not saying, you know, buck up, camper, things will be great. That's not at all what I'm saying. We have to wrestle through these things, feel them, and walk with Jesus and his people together through it. But what we can do is, instead of holding on to our expectations for what it should be, what life should be, what my family should be, what my health should be, what my career should be, what my retirement should be, we let that go and we live with expectancy in those times, in all times, that God is doing what he's promised and that he is going to fulfill it. And we can see him even in the dark. Sometimes we need other people to help identify him in the dark, to hold us through that, to walk with us through it. That's why we have the church. But that's what living with expectancy is about. There's a cute story of a Sunday school teacher, and I love these because I love kids. Kids always say what's on their mind, and sometimes it's really entertaining. Sometimes it's actually really profound. But she was teaching seven-year-olds about what it means to become Christians. And she hands out pencils after she talks about this, slips of paper, and invites the children, if they were ready to trust Jesus, to write on their little piece of paper, "I accept Jesus." And so the children were doing it, but there was one little boy who kind of messed up the wordings or maybe even heard it differently. And instead of writing, "I accept Jesus," he wrote, "I expect Jesus." That's the kind of heart that we have to have, is living with expectancy. And I want to close with just the first verse of "O Little Town of Bethlehem," because it ends with hope. This is what hope is. It's holding on to God's future, no matter how good or bad life is. "O little town of Bethlehem," you know this, "how still we see thee lie. Above thy deep and dreamless sleep, the silent stars go by. Yet in thy dark street shineth the everlasting light." What's the final verse? "The hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight." That's living with expectancy. All our hopes and fears are met in Jesus. Our expectations often are dashed in Jesus. But he's got a much better life than we have for ourselves. That's hope. That's living with expectancy. And my prayer for me and for you is that we live that this Christmas. We're reminded, as we are walking through this time of Advent, we're reminded that this is what Christmas is about. We're going to buy presents. We're going to be with family, with friends. We're going to have meals. We're going to do this. Next Wednesday, we're going to celebrate together as a church and have our party. But at the center of that is that living with expectancy of what God is doing, what he's done in Jesus, and what he is going to do. no matter how dark life gets.